the first house that we liked and were excited about. We went to see it, and our realtor, when we got there, she was like, hey, I've got to tell you something. I did a little digging on this house, and it turns out that the owner has been missing for a year.
Yikes.
Yeah.
So the owner could, like, show up.
Exactly. And you're going to be like, let's do a little digging in the backyard.
Right. Precise.
All right, welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast. We're exploring how to take our faith Beyond Sunday morning. With me, as always, Pastor David Bowser.
How we doing, Patrick?
And Elise McCarter.
Still here. Still pretty successful.
Yes. February time, did you see the groundhog did see his shadow?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Did you know that the groundhog is wrong more often than if you just flipped a coin?
Hmm.
I'm not surprised.
Just said.
Yeah.
I don't trust this groundhog's weather.
Yeah.
What's it called when you study weather?
Meteorology?
Yeah, I don't trust his meteorology.
For some reason, I was going with lobotomy. And
that's it. I definitely don't trust his lobotomy skills.
Right.
If you can't even guess what the weather's going to be like tomorrow,
You're a pretty bad brain surgeon. Yeah.
Why have we started putting in our faith in animals? I mean, on anything, really? Right. Like, what do they know?
So I've listened to a podcast this week on Stuff You Should Know, which is one of my favorite podcasts. And they did a whole episode.
For another podcast podcast.
Why not?
Yeah. Yeah.
But they did a whole thing about Groundhog Day and the history and, like, how it came about. And it actually has its roots in a Celtic holiday that's connected to, well, the Christianity then overtook that Celtic holiday. But it's a root in a Celtic holiday because this is the midpoint between winter and spring. Like, between the equinox and the other thing.
Daylight savings time.
Yeah, that's it.
Why not? But,
yeah. So Celtic holiday.
February 2nd is the midpoint between those two. And so it was a time when they had, like, this big celebration and used the weather on that day to judge when they should be planting crops and stuff like that. And then later cultures added in an animal. And then eventually it came to the U.S. and we're like,
here's
a groundhog. Let's do that. Yeah.
Wow. The majestic groundhog.
Sounds good. Yeah. Yes. So 6 more weeks of winter. But,
which in Texas means 70 degrees and sunny.
Yeah, so, I'm okay with it.
Like 6 months of this is great. Like, I'm on board.
Yeah. Yeah. If it means sub 90 degrees,
I'll take that for as long as I can get.
Yeah. We've got some news for us here.
Cool. Yes. I just assumed Groundhog Day was our news.
I did too.
No. That's just our, talking about
that one's for free.
Are we charging for this one?
Here we go.
Hold on, have to pay before they can hear this news story, apparently.
That's true.
Right.
Venmo us $5. When a South Carolina drive-thru coronavirus vaccine clinic got backed up, leaving people waiting for hours, the town mayor decided to call in a professional for help. A Chick-fil-A manager.
You know, people have joked about this for, like, the entirety of the pandemic. Like, every time there's been, like, backups, like, giving, you know.
Chick-fil-A.
Yeah. Everybody's saying, we just called Chick-fil-A.
A lot of truth to that.
They're good. Yeah. Right? I've never waited in line for
sometimes
more than, like, 10 minutes.
Sometimes they pray for you. Ooh. In the drive-thru?
Have you had a Chick-fil-A person pray for you?
People ask me all the time if they need to pray for me, which, now that I think about it...
Is that... maybe I'll say more about you than...
Right?
That has never happened to me. And my family goes to Chick-fil-A multiple times a week, and that's never happened.
You pull up at the window, and they, like, lean out the window and be like, can I pray for you today? That's, like,
the
experience.
Yeah, and I'm like, okay.
What is happening
calm
in your
down,
drive-thru
you
experience?
Little homeschooled creep. I was a homeschooled creep. So.
Right, so you're allowed to say that?
Yes.
Okay, there you go.
Often I'll have my dog with me and they'll offer me a dog biscuit, but I've never been offered prayer. So I don't know if I should be offended or grateful.
Right, yeah, I don't know where that goes.
Apparently my face looks like it needs prayer.
Yes, but when Elise sees people like, oh, this person needs a supernatural involved in their life. Yes, Chick-fil-A manager, let's see if I can get his name. Yes, Jerry Walkawack.
That's a good
name. I did not pronounce that right, but whatever. He stepped in to save the day. Jerry came in and said, there's a problem. They're only having one person checking people in. They don't have the multiple
two
people.
Lines.
With going down the line with their little
We need to get these people
iPad.
Some safety vests. We need to get these people a big awning so they're not too hot in the sun. And we need to get them out there, checking people in.
A keg full of tea is an incentive.
Mm-hmm. Keg full of tea.
Have you seen that?
I've not seen the tea keg.
The Chick-fil-A workers, they have the keg out there for their beverages so they can hydrate.
Sure.
But he did reduce the line with the help of other volunteers from an hours-long wait to just 15 minutes long.
Oh.
Impressive.
Yeah, and more than 1,000 people were vaccinated that day. And he said he'll be back when they come back for their for their return dose number two. He'll be back there to help mainline the system there and make sure it goes well.
Seems like maybe they could learn something and do it without him having to come back. Like maybe they could just say, oh, this is what you did. We can do this now.
Maybe he himself is just like the secret sauce for that that process going
smoothly. Where in South Carolina was this? Where did you say?
Let's see. I can get you.
I'm going to guess Kershaw County.
Mount Pleasant.
Oh, okay. Oh. Pleasant. Yeah.
I was close.
Yeah. Speaking of secret sauce,
Chick-fil-A. You could have said any county in South Carolina. We said, yeah, I was close. Yeah.
Nobody knows or cares. So, yeah.
Oof. Whoa. Ouch. Yeah. As two former South Carolina residents, one born,
being South Carolinian.
Yeah.
Yeah. I stay by my statement.
Moderately offended at that, sir. And we say to you, good day.
It's not very Mount Pleasant of you.
We said good day, Patrick.
Yeah, so that would be our Chick-fil-A news. I have another short bit of news here. Because a follow-up on a previous story. Remember we talked about Subway bread not being real bread?
Yes.
I do. Yeah. Subway cake.
Yeah.
That's actually, I love some cake with my Italian sandwiches. Yeah.
Well, now there's another lawsuit involving Subway.
Uh-oh.
That their tuna is not real tuna.
Not real. Oh, Lord. What is it?
This is why I don't eat tuna. Well, that and the fact that...
You don't like tuna.
I don't like tuna. Yeah, okay. I'm definitely not getting tuna from Subway. I'll tell you that right now.
A lawsuit is alleging it's not real tuna. They can't say what it is, but they do say it's not tuna.
That's concerning that they can't prove what it is.
Is this like imitation crab meat situation like unethically harvested cats situation?
No,
or...
I believe tuna
is there an ethical
relatively...
way to harvest cats?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Tuna is relatively inexpensive compared to many fish out there. I mean, I think so they'd have to find something even cheaper than tuna. So I'm not sure what this could be. Is this, is this just, there's a little bit of tuna and a lot of asbestos just like mixed in a, in a giant tub.
Right.
Sure. Where is this lawsuit taking place?
California. This is California.
Okay.
Yeah. Unsurprising. Yes.
So you can go to Subway, you get your cake bread, your fake tuna, all there.
If
Subway,
there's one thing I want on my cake, it's definitely fake
tuna. Yeah.
Subway is like, denying the allegations. They're saying it's 100% tuna. And their new ad campaign says, keep fishing, folks. We'll keep serving 100% wild-caught tuna. So a little...
Wild-caught tuna-flavored paste.
Wild-caught tuna-flavored paste mixed with mayonnaise. Yeah. Maybe it's fake because it has to sit in a little tub like all day on its line, and I'm not sure that's good for
I don't
fish.
Think that changes the molecular construct of the fish.
But maybe they're saying, like, maybe they're not using tuna. Even if it is cheap to use tuna, it's not, it doesn't hold all day in a little
It couldn't be tuna, because tuna wouldn't do that. I gotcha.
Yes, to get scooped out with its ice cream scoop and just light on.
Wow, I'm hungry.
And it's sitting in its tuna water.
Okay, all right, we get
tuna
it.
Tuna water. Before it gets put on its tuna cake to be served.
Yeah, so...
Speaking of things that are going to be in my nightmares now.
Yeah.
So you don't get the tuna when you go to Subway? I have gotten tuna at Subway.
How was
it? It tasted like tuna fish, so I don't know.
And how was your food poisoning?
It's been a while since I've been to a Subway, because I think it's also kind of gross from start to finish.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, when I was pregnant with my daughter, for some reason, all I wanted was Subway.
Yeah, you told us that story when we did the cake thing.
Subway cake.
Yeah. Well, the story's evergreen, and the audience wanted to hear it again.
Because you got a salad on your bread.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, our main story is coming from Relevant Magazine. And a few weeks ago, we talked about The Mandalorian, a Disney Plus show. And this is another article based off another Disney Plus show that we'll be spinning off of. You don't have to watch any of the show or know anything that's going on. But the show WandaVision. Are you familiar with the show WandaVision?
I know the premise. I have not seen WandaVision.
Yeah, I actually watched the first episode week before last, I think.
Yeah? What'd you think?
I liked it.
Thumbs.
Thumb and a half out of two thumbs, I'd say. Sure. It was like a Dick Van Dyke themed episode.
I do like Dick Van Dyke.
Yeah, very fun.
Okay. Yes. So I'm all cut up. I love WandaVision. I think it's a great show. So at the time of recording, there are four episodes released. This upcoming Friday, there'll be another episode. So they release on Fridays. So WandaVision is set in the Marvel Universe. So of the like 22 Marvel movies that have come out, this is kind of the next chapter in that saga. And it is centered around two of the characters, Wanda Maximoff, who is the Scarlet Witch in the comics, and mm-hmm. she has witch-like power. She's able to, like, move things with her mind, and also has the ability to distort and warp reality for people so they can change, like, people's perspectives and how they view the world. She can do that. And Vision, who is, like, an android, who in the comics and in the movies is powered by one of the Infinity Stones. This is, like, one of the special magic stones that are in the world, in the universe.
You put a magic stone in his head and he turns on, just like everybody's, you know,
pretty much
toys.
Yes.
Yep. It's the magic stone is the battery.
Yeah,
all right.
That's right. It's fine. Yes. Plug him in.
And for the sake of listening to this podcast, you don't need to know any of these things or even watch any of the WandaVision television series, but I'll kind of give you a brief backdrop of what this show is.
Okay.
And then we'll go from there. So, in the Avengers movies, the last Avengers movies, the main villain Thanos, was going around collecting all those stones, and the last one to collect was Vision, his stone.
Right.
And Wanda and Vision have a romantic relationship in the show, or in the movies.
Which is kind of weird, because he's not human.
A lot of questions, yeah.
Yeah. Look, if that's your biggest question after all this, then I think we're going to be okay.
A fair critique, yeah.
Right.
But anyway, to prevent Thanos from collecting the last stone, Wanda kills Vision, destroying the stone. Mm. Thanos uses time travel abilities to go back, resurrect Vision, and then kill him all over again in front of her, taking the last stone, and then erasing half of humanity and the rest of the universe.
Very dramatic.
Yeah. And that includes Wanda. She's erased from history. In the next movie, all of our heroes go back. They fix everything.
Hooray!
Yes, they collect the new stones. They... Mm-hmm. bring back all the people that were erased, including Wanda, but Vision was dead, so he did not come back. But in our show, WandaVision, that takes place a few weeks after the heroes win, Wanda and Vision are back, and they're trapped in this universe that it's like TV sitcom land. So it's like they're trapped at Nick at Night kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. And so the first episode that Elise watched would be like the Dick Van Dyke Show, and Wanda and Vision are this married couple, and they're hosting his boss and wife over for dinner, and there's hijinks of like, we forgot what this show was, or what this date actually is. We're trying to cook dinner at the last minute and keep our guests entertained, but we also kind of see weird stuff is happening, like,
ooh.
Who's trapping them in this make-believe TV land?
Right.
And every episode kind of is taking this premise of Wanda and Vision as a couple and trapping them in a new sitcom reality. So episode 2 would be more like I Dream of Jeannie or Bewitched. Mm-hmm. Episode 3 a little more like Brady Bunch or The Partridge Family. And it's just kind of going throughout history. So the next one will be like Family Ties and then in the 80s, then like Roseanne or in the 90s and things like that. So it's kind of this TV sitcom world. So if you are like me...
I like that Roseanne was the 90s choice that he went for.
Right,
that was interesting 90s. Yeah, anyway. All right.
Well, what other family sitcom... What other family sitcom from the 90s would you, you know, uplift as kind of the 90s?
Full House? Or what was the one with Steve Urkel? Family Matters?
Yeah.
That'd be another
was Cosby Show 80s? Or?
Cosby Show
was
80s.
Cosby Show
was
80s,
yeah. Well, Full 80s, House early 90s.
Full House is a family sitcom, but it doesn't have like a central... mom and dad relationship in Full House, because Bob Saget would be the dad, but there's no mom in that relationship.
Spoilers.
For Full House.
Full House, yeah. Yes. 30 years late.
Obviously, if you're a Marvel fan like I am, you'd be watching this and you're like, wait a second, Vision is dead.
Yeah.
What's he doing here?
This ain't right.
Right.
This is not right. And two, who is trapping Wanda and Vision in this TV universe? And as you watch it more and more, it over and over kind of gives this impression that Wanda, the witch who can alter reality, is maybe the villain who's doing this to herself and to this town and all the people, all these extras who are forced to kind of play out their parts. She's kind of putting on them, or she's at least a willing participant in this. All right, so we'll kind of ignore a lot of that, but it does kind of
good setup. All
right. Yeah. But it does kind of ask this question: is this a lie that Wanda wants to believe, and therefore is engaging in it in herself? So she's allowing this lie to be told, because in truth, if people are trying to come in and rescue them from the Saw Eye, she's like, well, why would I want to be rescued, right? Like, why would I want to go back to reality where my love is murdered, I disappeared for 5 years, and I'm having to live in a world where this is happening? It's safer and easier to live in a sitcom version of reality where she's married. In this sitcom world, they have kids now.
Yeah.
It's this happy... Yes, yeah.
More questions.
Kinda
weird. Yeah.
It's kind of weird. It's kind of in this place of like, I love this reality. Why would I want to be rescued from it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And probably in our own lives, where we could kind of gather, there are lies that we tell ourselves because we want to believe them.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and this is something that's not central to just now here in 2021. Throughout history, there are lies that we've told ourselves as humanity because it's safe and easy and we want to believe them. So that's what we really want to focus in on, this idea of like, what makes the self-told lies so alluring to each of us? So maybe let's start here and say, like, what are lies we tell ourselves that we want to believe?
Mm.
Ooh. You're out the dirty laundry.
Like, yeah. See, you're thinking, like, this, us personally, this is like a generic...
This humanity. What is humanity? Yes.
I think one right now that I say I have participated in is that it's okay that my productivity is super low because coronavirus and pandemic, which is not necessarily a lie, but I think maybe for me it crosses over into being a lie sometimes, where it becomes a crutch of like... No, I've just gotten in the habit of being tired and low motivation. Mm-hmm. It's not so much the existential stress of the pandemic anymore. I'm just leaning on that.
Yeah.
I think, you know, an easy lie, and in this article kind of goes through a few. I'll highlight a few of these. One that I certainly have engaged in myself is, it's not my problem. I should not get involved. And so I think whenever we see conflict or hurt or things like that, it's easy to tell ourselves the lies, like, right? Like, I shouldn't be engaged in this. It's not my problem. And so I think that's an easy lie that we can kind of tell ourselves over and over and over again. Any other lies that it's easy, that humanity is easy to kind of trap ourselves into a new reality?
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lie of like, people can always, I don't want to sound trite, but people can always pull themselves up by the bootstraps. If you just work hard enough, you can make it.
That's a
huge lie that we perpetuate, because sometimes you can't. Sometimes it doesn't matter how hard you work, and you just can't do that. I think we tell ourselves lies that, you know, racism is dead. Mm-hmm. Oh, we passed the Civil Rights Act, so we don't have to worry about racism anymore. I think that's a lie that we tell ourselves.
Yeah.
That parts of our culture tell themselves. I think
some opposite ones are, it's not my fault, so I don't need to take any responsibility for it, or it's all my fault, and I need to carry all the responsibility for it.
These
are great. I think that bootstrap lie is especially effective here in the United States. It's kind of what we tell ourselves, like, success is based on hard work, and then what happens when you work really hard and you don't get success? Then new lies start to set in of like, well, it's X's fault, and usually that puts on maybe an individual or a group of people and saying, like, if only they weren't here, or only this did not happen, or only the government or X thing wasn't standing in my way, I would have that success. So I think that that's part of it, like, right? Like, it never is kind of like, hey, the reality is some people work really, really hard and they just don't get successful.
You can finish your thought. I was just going to say that one in particular is really interesting because it's sort of part of our national identity. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, when you think, or I guess maybe I don't want to say for everybody, but when I think of like, okay, what is sort of the stereotypical, this is what it means to be an American. It's that like bootstrap mentality, you know,
hard work,
anything's possible. You can do it. Yeah. And that really ignores the reality of a lot of the time you're working on connections, and most people don't do things by themselves.
I think on a more personal level, not just like my personal, but like on an individual level, maybe is a better way to say that. We get trapped in this lie of our own self-worth, that we lie mm-hmm. to ourselves that if we just had X, Y, or Z, that would finally make us worthwhile.
Right. Or
and
happy.
Or happy or whatever. Yeah. That. And so we lie about, oh, I just need this one other thing. I just mm-hmm. need this one raise. I just need this one job. I just need this one relationship. I just need this one kid, right? Whatever that might be.
Contentment's right around the corner.
Yep. Yeah. It's always the next thing rather than looking to ourselves and finding that, yeah. And I think we lie about what we perceive in other people as well. I think mm-hmm. we are lying to ourselves when we look at someone else and say, they've got it all together. Why can't I be like more like them?
Yeah.
And we lie to ourselves when we look at them and say, well, they're just a dumpster fire.
Right.
They just can't get their life together. Why can't they be more like me? I think both of those are lies that we are telling ourselves mm-hmm. about other
Simultaneously.
People.
Simultaneously.
Yeah.
All the time.
Sure.
I feel like Elise is saying this about me right now. Yeah, I'm not sure which
one
side.
Do you think you are?
I'm not going to say that on the air.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, in a show like WandaVision, which is one that I really, really enjoy, it's kind of like this really rich universe. It's really kind of like, it's fun to like get on the message boards and like, what are our theories? What's going on? That's what I'm into.
Patrick and I have very different understandings of what it means to have fun, but all right.
Yeah, I do enjoy it. It's like a mystery.
I can get down with a messenger board.
Yeah.
Trolling it.
In 1998. Yeah, cool. That's fun.
Yeah, I love that you love that.
No, but my wife has told me before about me is like, I'm a person with a very rich internal world. So it's easy for me to mm-hmm. get kind of lost or block out what's going on around me. I'm just trapped in my own head and in my own mind. And so sometimes in that rich internal world that I can get trapped into, you know, I'll replay conflicts or instances mm-hmm. where I'll come out the victor or winner. Mm-hmm. If only mm-hmm. I would have said this, things would have been better. And sometimes that can spiral into people around me. I'm looking ahead of like, what's the conflict that's going to come next? And I want to be prepared so I can win, or I can say what's really on my heart or my mind at those times. And so sometimes that can lead into the people that are around me that I love and care for. I'm playing out what happens if they say this negative thing mm-hmm. so that I'm ready and prepared for it. And so it can kind of this lie of like, I got to be prepared for when blank happens so that I'm ready. And that means a level of kind of sometimes distrust amongst mm-hmm. relationships mm-hmm. on me, because I'm always ready for that next shoe to drop. And so that's a personal thing that I know I can engage in. And that kind of leads us to maybe sometimes lies are like, hey, the people that are care about us and are around us, they really don't, because if they knew this X thing, they wouldn't.
Right.
Or it's kind of this tenuous grasp of a relationship that it could collapse at any moment, and you got to be prepared for that. And that's a lie people can tell themselves. And I know, because that's something that I can tell myself pretty easily. Again, I get trapped in a very rich internal world, and that's part of the dangers of that type of thing. You know, people who are addicted can tell themselves, mm-hmm. I can quit whenever I want. This isn't really that big of a problem. And they easily omit all the ways it actually has been a problem and all the relationships it has cost them. You know, it's easy to kind of whitewash those away and say, no, I'm in control mm-hmm. of these types of things. Or, you know, like this conflict wasn't really my fault when deep down it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I know it was. Yeah. And so these lies can be alluring. So maybe we identify these lies. Maybe like, Why do we tell ourselves these lies that like we grasp onto and kind of live in them for a season or a time? Why is it so alluring?
Yeah, well, I think Elisa's got ideas, so I'm gonna back out and let her go.
Trying to minimize cognitive dissonance.
Ooh, callback.
Yeah,
I like it.
To like 40 episodes ago or something, right. But yeah.
Yeah,
I
think that's a great point. We want to eliminate our own mental suffering. I mm-hmm. mean, if we take this WandaVision example, right? If in reality, and you know, this is, I don't even know if this is a spoiler because I haven't seen it. So if in reality, Vision is dead
mm-hmm.
and Wanda is creating this alternate reality in which Vision is not dead, right? I think it's pretty clear she here is trying to create an alternate reality in which her pain is eased.
Right.
And where she can play out in a world that she would prefer, or a world that would have been in line with her hopes and her dreams and her love.
Yeah.
And what it sounds like we're finding out from the episode is that you can't do that, that it just keeps coming into conflict with itself and it will eventually break down. And I think the same is true of the lies we tell ourselves, right?
Yeah.
We hold on to lies thinking, hey, if I just live into this, then it'll be true. If I can just pull myself up by my bootstraps, if I can just work harder, I can just get through this one next challenge and then it's going to be all easy sailing. I can just have this one relationship and everything. And so we tell ourselves that, trying to ease our mental suffering or our mental pain of knowing that it's not true. But we see the ways in which that continues to break down, and we find cracks in that that way of thinking throughout the process.
Yeah, I mean, I would think, particularly with grief, when grief is involved, I would think it would be sort of a cathartic exercise to go through that alternate reality and tell yourself that lie for a little bit. I think it's a problem when you pack up and live there, though, you know, and that now is not just something you're exploring mentally. It's where you live, you know?
Yeah.
No, I think that's a great point, because I think we do need to give space for it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a huge... Like, we can't just say, no, you have to face reality right now.
Right now,
you have to be aware.
Bootstraps.
Yeah, vision is never coming back, right? You know, you can't do that. That's not healthy either. And so giving space for it, but then pulling people back into reality.
Yeah.
I think that's something that we, from the outside, it's a fine line to walk, you know, to figure out, like, if I've got this friend who's telling themselves this lie, you know, when is it... When do I need to address this?
Yeah.
When do I need to help them see the lie versus when is it like, okay, this is, you know, this is okay.
Yeah.
When is it a healthy coping and when is it an unhealthy coping?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'll give a personal example. I have some social anxiety. So a sort of, I guess the opposite of what you do, Patrick, is I replay everything that's happened, every conversation and social interaction that I've had afterwards. And frequently in my head replay it negatively, like oh, that was a dumb thing to say, they now hate me, you know, even if it was wonderful and we had a great time. So for me, it's very cathartic to sort of talk that out and be like, this is what I'm thinking in my head, talk out with, you know, my spouse or a friend or whatever, this is what I'm thinking in my head, talk me through this, you know, because I know that I'm not seeing this accurately.
Oh, that's a great point. And I think that's good self-awareness too, that, right? You're able to identify the lies that you're saying and like, I need an external voice to speak truth into this.
Right.
And I think that's a really helpful thing for us to remember, is that sometimes the lie needs an external voice to break in. And we, at some point, we have to choose to listen to that voice or not.
Right.
And that's a choice that we each have to make as we encounter that lie, right? When someone comes to us and says, this is not the way reality is.
Yeah.
We have to choose, are we taking the blue pill or the red pill?
Right.
And, you know, how far down the rabbit hole are we going to go? Did I go far enough with the Matrix? Did we go far enough with the Matrix?
Sure.
I think that far is always far enough with the Matrix.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think reality, the reason why I want to tell myself these lies is because, well, they're safer, right? Like, they're safer, they're easier, they take a complex world and they make it more manageable and so that I can comprehend it. So that's why it's easy, you know, our bootstrap analogy, it's easy to say that because it's harder to say, hey, success is really based on a large set of factors, many of which are outside of your control.
Yeah.
And that's not safe, right? Like, and that causes us to say like, well, if I do really work really hard, I might not be successful, or I am successful, and it may not really be based on my hard work. It may be on a, based on a lot of things I had no control over that just happened. And now here I am on the other side of it. And I don't want to admit those things to myself, that because then my relationship with whatever I've gained or held onto in this world, in this life, could be taken away at any moment. If, if everything was gained off things that are outside of my control, they could be lost. Just as easily for things that are outside of my control. And I don't want to feel that way because that's scary.
Yeah, I really appreciate what you're saying there, Patrick. I think it gets back to some other things that we've talked about in previous episodes around living in this tension, right? That I think another kind of general lie that can get more specific is that there's a clear right and wrong to every scenario. Or there's a correct way to handle a situation and a wrong way to handle a situation. The world is black and white, however you want to think about this, right? And I think what you're describing here, Patrick, is our refusal to live in the tension, to live in the middle of saying both of these are bad or both of these are good and bad at the same time is more accurate. And, and we just don't want to live in the middle of that because it's hard and it's constant work. It is so much easier to just get up in the morning and say, well, this is the way the world is. I'm going to keep going.
Yeah.
It is so much easier to do that than to get up every day and say, Well, I don't really know. Like, yeah. I'm facing 100 different stories, and I don't know what's right and wrong and left and right and where I what I believe or how I can. That's exhausting.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think attached to this, and something we have to kind of maybe address here as we're moving forward, is oftentimes positions of faith, like church or religious leaders or churches, help sometimes feed into these lies. And
Elise just pointed at me as you started talking about church leaders.
I gave you a thumbs up for turning up the volume on the mic.
It looked like she was like, this guy right here.
Feeding into these lies, tell you what. Offender number one.
Here comes bus and push. All right, there we go.
That oftentimes we can say, I have been lied to by my religious organizations and institutions, that they've tried to take a complex world and reduce it into a very simple world. And I understand that. I get it. So I do want to address, like, are there times or ways that you feel the church feeds into these kind of self,
actualization?
Self-actualization lies, types of things that we want to embrace. That's easy. You know, and then maybe even the church, our religious institutions, don't even really know they're lying. You know, like, I don't it's a purposeful lie. It's just one thing that's easy for us to believe as a religious organization.
I got a big one.
What do you got?
Purity culture.
Ooh. Zing. Yeah. No, wait. Not zing. I don't know. What the...
So, about 2 years ago, we did a podcast on purity culture. But yes, but Elise was not with us. So why don't you tell us more about that kind of
I don't think you were
lie.
Even like...
Why do I little... have to tell you more about it?
Because you brought it up.
You brought it up.
Okay. I mean, I think that that is a very, I mean, to me, sort of on the other side of purity culture, not meaning that I've run all the way in the opposite direction and
you've come through that culture. Yeah.
Yes.
Before we get there, we have to define this, because not everybody's going to say, like, purity culture, oh, I know what that is.
We have a whole episode about it. All right.
Yes.
What is the official definition?
I would say purity culture, you know, again, in general terms, would be this idea that remaining chaste or pure sexually will equal a fulfilled sexual relationship with your future spouse.
Call back to last week's episode, being a woman of good repute.
Right. Yes. Yeah, I'm resisting the urge to put all of this in, like, heavy, sarcastic quotes.
That's
sure.
Really good, yeah.
And so that idea of remaining chaste or pure had a lot of different ways. It wasn't just, like, stay a virgin until marriage. Yeah. It had a lot of stuff attached to it. And then one of the things we've realized, especially teenagers who grew up kind of in the 90s, where this was kind of a major force for youth groups and True Love Waits movements and purity rings and all this stuff, realized as they got married, hey, this didn't work. Like, this did not lead me to a fulfilled sexual relationship later in life. And that doesn't necessarily mean in your teen, just experiment however you would like.
Right. But that is not what we're advocating. We'll just be clear on that.
But it did mean that lie was present there.
Yes.
That a guarantee was promised that the church could not give you. That if you remained chaste, you would get what you really, really want later. And that wasn't the case.
Well, it's more than just that, though. It's a certain level of moral superiority. It's not just this equals a fulfilling sexual relationship later on. Sure. It's this equals some sort of morally superior standing in God's eyes.
Yeah. Well, I think part of that, you know, again, why the church said these things or why it was easy to latch onto them is, well, the churches can be afraid. Like, we're afraid that, like, what happens in a increasing sexually expressive culture that's scary and weird and different. How do we kind of rein those things in? And I think maybe from a good place of, like, biblical boundaries and guidelines related to sex, but then in order to convince teens to be on board, they made a lot of promises that you can't really keep. Mm-hmm. You know, like, especially, like, you can't say to a 16-year-old girl and boy, hey, I know your hormones are raging, but trust me, if you just hold on later, when you're married, it'll be better, because it might not be. Like, we can honestly say, like, we can't control those things. Or it really maybe results in those 16 and 17-year-olds holding on till they're 21, marrying the first person that they ever have a real romantic relationship with, and things going south quickly, because they're not emotionally prepared to handle what they've taken
the time.
On. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that's a good one. And again, I would certainly highlight a podcast we did about 2 years ago that will expand that further. I have another one here that that I remember thinking and experiencing growing up, and that the church had a monopoly on morality. Mm-hmm. That the church is, if you were a Christian, you were just a more moral person than the world around you. That you understood truth, kindness, generosity different than those around you. And then as you get older, for me, and you interact with and engage with people who are not followers of Jesus, and you're like, mm-hmm. wow, they're actually better at a lot of these things than I am.
Yeah.
Like, they're kinder and nicer, and they do more for the world around them than I'm actively doing. And it kind of throws in the space, like, being a Christian actually doesn't mean I'm more moral.
Yeah. Mm. Turns out I didn't understand arrogance very well.
Yeah. Yeah. I think... Oh, go ahead.
It was easy to latch on to that lie because I wanted it to be true, right? I mm-hmm. wanted to say, like, this relationship with Jesus, I am engaged differently with the world, and everyone should be a relationship, also engaged in a relationship with Jesus, and then it would just work itself out. We would all be more moral if everyone thought like me. And that's just not necessarily the case. So.
Yeah, I think on that same vein, I think we've been telling ourselves that church and politics don't belong together.
Mm.
And, you know, I think we've, in the United States in particular, we've bought into the First Amendment, right, that has a separation of church and state. And so we've said that means the church can't talk about politics, which is not what it means, right? The separation of church and state means the state can't tell you what religion you have to be.
Right.
But the church absolutely has a place in empowering its people to go and live in a world in which politics are a part. And I think, you know, you kind of alluded to this earlier, Patrick, I think the church has bought into that lie in large part because it allows us to keep large groups of people with disparate beliefs together, and it allows churches, individual churches, congregations to stay afloat financially. I mean, because mm-hmm. if we say, well, if we take a stance, then somebody's going to leave, and then mm-hmm. we're not going to be able to financially do X, Y, and Z.
Right.
I think that's been a constant concern. And not every church, for sure, but I think that's been a constant an awareness that people have. And there is something to bringing people together and to holding people that disagree on different issues. Mm-hmm. And absolutely, you know, across the board, Jesus says feed the hungry. Jesus doesn't say how to feed the hungry. And there are lots of different political ways that we can go about achieving that particular goal.
Mm-hmm.
But when we start arguing about whether or not the hungry deserve to be fed,
and
or when saying the hungry deserve to be fed is seen as being political.
I think we
are crossing into an area which is unhelpful and is buying into that lie.
Mm-hmm.
I think usually the lie we convince ourselves on that one is like, we should not talk about politics when it's politics I disagree with.
Yeah.
Usually, people, whenever from the pulpit, are saying things that they already believe about the world and how politics and life interact. And if it's something they're already on board with, they're usually fine with it.
They're nodding. Yeah.
Yeah. Usually, when it's something I disagree with, they're like, And I'm going to be honest with you, I am part of that. I do not want to hear from the pulpit politics I disagree with.
Right.
But if it's something that supports my preconceived notions of how the world works, I'm a little more okay with it.
Like,
I'm a little more on board.
Which I think is... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think it's just...
I think
that feeds into another lie where we have told ourselves that church is about making us comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so we've been lied to by the church and to ourselves, saying we come to church in order to feel comfortable. And that is hardly ever what Jesus did. I mean, there are certainly points where Jesus' main message was a message of comfort, but most of the Gospels are Jesus challenging people and making them uncomfortable in the world in which mm-hmm. they live.
Yeah, and I actually have another lie, also bouncing off of this too, that this idea that when I read the scriptures and read Jesus, I see clearly he would be aligned with one political party or with my worldview. And I see that clearly. And that's just bananas, right? Like, this figure that existed 2,000 years ago in a completely different part of our world and under a completely different political system, and we see he aligns so perfectly with one of two political mm-hmm. parties in our world today. That's insane to think that.
It is.
But it's so easy to fall into that because we want to think my side is the good side. It's the side Jesus would be on. Clearly. Mm-hmm. And so, like, it's so easy to say, like, that would obviously be that. And by the way, both Christians on both sides of the aisle think this obviously.
Yeah.
Like, it's not even like a question of like, I think Jesus would not really be that concerned about this thing, or on the opposite side on this one issue.
Yeah.
It's just like, Jesus is obviously on my side on every political issue.
Right.
You know, that's pretty unique and pretty arrogant, and also a lie that's so easy to wrap ourselves into, because it reminds, it makes us feel like we're on the good team.
Right.
And that's just not the case. To think that Jesus is a Republican or Democrat is unbelievably ridiculous.
Yeah, Jesus is a Green Party. Come on. Wait, no, that's not right.
Okay. Libertarian?
That was a weird way to say that word.
Libertarian? I feel like it deserves to be said that way.
Sure, okay.
Yeah, so any other examples of lies that the church can tell? Or maybe we need to get into, like, what do we do about this? Like, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, that would be really valuable.
I think we could go on all day coming up with the lies, but I think people kind of get that. So I think moving to where we go is a great.
Yeah.
It seemed like you had more you wanted to say.
I'm looking at you. Oh, where do we go?
Where are we going?
Yeah.
We're going into a solution. We're
okay.
Well, I think, you know, what do we need? We need that voice, right? In the same way we were talking about earlier. We need the voice from the outside to proclaim truth to us, which. Mm-hmm. For me, is why a community of faith is so valuable. Because when I'm doing faith on my own, it's really easy to buy into lies because I don't have anyone to point out that anything's weird. And so if I see something weird, I just immediately assimilate it into my understanding of the world, and it just becomes part of the lie.
Yeah.
Right? Rather than noticing that there's a glitch, I just say, oh, that's just supposed to happen, and that's normal. And so we need a community of faith because we need people who can speak to us, and we need to enter into a community of faith with a willingness to be told that we are living, or that we're a part of a lie, or that we're have heard a lie, or that this thing that we believed is not the way it always was. I mean, sometimes, you know, you get up on a Sunday morning and, you know, as a preacher, and you try to say something that you think is like straightforward, simple, everybody is aware of it, right? Like you talk about, well, we don't really know how many wise men there were. We just know there were three gifts that were brought. It just says there were these magi from the east, and it brought these three gifts. And so we have said that there are three wise men, and people are like, whoa, 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 no, no. The church has told me for years. Yeah. I grew up singing, you know, We Three Kings. I'm like, yeah, we did all those things. That does. And so when we're testy about those little lies, right, these things that, I mean, it clearly plays no part in the greater understanding of faith, how many wise men there were. But when we're, you know, so invested in those little things, then when it comes to a big thing like saying, no, the church does have a role in politics, or no, that the church isn't supposed to always make you comfortable, or no, God really does want your money. Like, it's not just about you giving of your time. That's valuable, but God also wants you to be aware that God has blessed you with money, and God wants to use those things too, right? When it comes to those things, we have to be willing and open to being challenged and to hearing that. And frankly, no pastor can make you do that.
Right.
You have to, at some point, come to a place where you say, I'm willing to be aware that I might not be right in everything, and that some of the things that I hold dear might be lies.
Right.
I mean, this is like an addict, right? And this is not to say that every person who comes into church is secretly an addict to their lies.
Sure.
But before an addict can begin the road to recovery, they have to say, I'm ready to take the road to recovery. Mm-hmm. No one else can drag them there.
Right.
And if you try to drag them there, it will only make it worse, which is why, as pastors, we don't try to drag you there. We just try to open up this invitation for you to see the world is not always what you think it is.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to invite you into the space to, to be aware that even as a pastor, I am regularly, weekly, monthly confronting lies that I thought were true. And I'm finding new things out. And that's part of the process. That's part of having the kingdom of God revealed in your midst, because the kingdom of God shows you the way things are supposed to be, not the way they are.
Yeah, I think, Jesus is going to tell us in John here, and this is kind of referenced in our article here about WandaVision, if you hold to my teaching, you're really my disciples, then you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free.
Mm-hmm.
And I love this idea of, like, truth being a freeing thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and that it's not just my truth. It's not just the truth that I perceive the world to be, but the truth based on Jesus can set people free.
Mm-hmm.
And before using that as like a weapon against the world of like, let me tell you how you could be free, it first has to be saying like, let me internalize that. And how am I being set free from this? And how am I being set free from this every day, right? Like, because every time we confront one of these lies that we tell ourselves and we watch it crumble, a new one is going to pop up in its place easily, right? Like it's going to come in there quickly. Like this example you gave about the three kings, it doesn't really matter how many kings there were probably for this person, but the idea, I'm sure the driving force behind that is if that falls apart, everything else could fall apart.
Right.
And that's the real lie that's there. Of like, if my nativity scene is wrong, is the nativity real?
Right.
How can we latch onto that? And maybe, you know, that's my perspective, but like being willing to say like that's not the point of faith. Is I put everything together perfectly on my jigsaw puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
It's something completely different. It's how this cosmic force interacts with the ordinariness of my life and transforms it into something bigger and more beautiful. And that's harder, and that's complex, and that's challenging. And every day it can shift and change, and that's scary.
Yeah. You know, I think that... Actually, I'm going to give a quick content warning for what I'm about to say, because it's okay. going to involve a jolly man in a red suit. And I don't know if kids might be listening, but parents might want to, I don't know, you can choose for yourself. But so I think Santa is a helpful example because, you know, as a culture, we have bought into this lie that Santa has always been this jolly fat guy in the red suit. And if you look like back through history, like that version of Santa has really only existed in the United States since like the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
And before that, there were all these other kind of innovations of this Saint Nick or Santa Claus or, you know, this guy who, this mythical figure who took on all these different personalities and all these different characters based on the culture in which you were. And so in one sense, there's a lie that we have there. And many people are challenged just to even think through that. The other piece of that is I've had friends who are very well-meaning in the faith who have said, and this was all back in like high school and college, so I have no idea how this has played out in, you know, reality, but they said, I'm never going to tell my kid about Santa Claus because if they know that I'm lying to them about Santa Claus, they're going to think I'm lying to them about Jesus.
Right.
To which I want to say, like, listen, if you haven't told or taught your kid the difference between the ability to tell the difference between lies that we tell for the enjoyment of life and lies that have the meaning of life, like if you haven't figured out how to sort through that, you are failing them as a parent.
Right.
Because we're selling ourselves short. We're always going to be confronting these lies. We're always going to be confronting Santas that aren't real.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to be able to sort through those and still find the nuggets of truth. And yes, your child might go through a moment where they say, well, if Santa's not real, I don't believe in Jesus anymore. They might go through that moment. But hopefully you're able to give them periods where they can see, you know, the faithfulness of Jesus is different than the faithfulness of Santa. Like Santa might stop showing up if I, you know, if I'm bad,
right?
Or, you know, Santa gives me coal when I do it. But Jesus continues to show up, continues to be a part of your life. The church, hopefully, continues to show up and be a part of your life because of the faithfulness that's there. And yeah, I don't, it made more sense when I started that, but I think that's
No, I like it. Yeah.
So I think, and this idea of how can we deal with these lies, it's one, turning to Jesus. And also,
as we sing the song?
Pastor David, turning to communities of faith and being willing to hear and listen to truth. And I think that that could be difficult because lies can be very alluring and very, very seductive in a sense. Like it's safe and easy, and we want sometimes to believe this. Especially, life is hard, and a lie makes that hardness easier. Who wouldn't want to be connected to something like that?
Yeah.
But I think...
And leaders in the church have to be willing to be confronted with truth as well.
Yeah.
I think that we have done ourselves a disservice by elevating leaders to say, oh, well, they're the ones who speak truth. No, truth comes from wherever the Holy Spirit wants to bring about truth. You know, I do not hold the monopoly on that, nor does any other church leader. The Holy Spirit's going to do what the Holy Spirit's going to do.
Yeah. I was going to say it's, you know, the bit about turning to faith communities to hear truth. Is great. I think it's especially tricky when your faith community is the one who is lying to you.
Turn to a different faith community.
Sure.
Again, if you go to a faith community and everybody's saying the exact same thing and that the problem in our world is the other, somebody who's not in our circle and not telling you the problems in your life are really internal, are really kind of your, kind of at the core of like what's going on, I think you're going to find that's a group that's going to be willingly engaged in lying to one another.
So come to Lord of Life, where we'll tell you you're the problem.
Wait, well, mean,
hold on. That sounded again, better in my head.
Yeah.
I think that yes, that you get what if you're not. All right, so all right. Any other thoughts?
No, I think that was good. I'm gonna go sift through some of the lies I've been telling myself during this podcast.
Yeah,
and I don't want Chick-fil-A.
Have you been lying to yourself that you don't want Chick-fil-A? Don't buy into the lie. Face the truth.
Yeah.
You want Chick-fil-A.
Go get prayed for it, Chick-fil-A.
Yes.
I really want to do an experiment about you getting prayed for, see how often this happens. I'm sorry.
I'm blown away. Let us know. Seriously,
it's been like four or five times.
Yeah.
Please let us know if you've ever been offered to pray for at the Chick-fil-A drive-in line. Mm-hmm. I want to know because it's never
better yet. If you've ever worked for Chick-fil-A and have ever received instruction on who and when to pray for somebody,
we need to know.
We want to know that too.
I want that employee handbook.
That's right.
I highly recommend WandaVision. I think it's really, really interesting. Again, I like a mystery, a puzzle to unwrap and unsolve, and I think this is a good one. Plus, I was raised on Nick at Night, so it's kind of neat watching these homages to classic television and things like that. I think it's really fun.
I was raised on enjoying Nick at Night anytime we went to a hotel.
Same. Yeah, so I said that, but I think we're in the same boat.
Yeah.
Cheap parents. Love you, Mom and Dad. Didn't pay for
Not pay for cable.
So
sure.
It was a special occasion.
But got to go to a hotel. Got to stay up to watch the Dick Van Dyke Show.
TV Land and Nick at Night. Yeah.
I was only child, so Nick at Night, like TV was like my sibling. So like, it was a lonely childhood sometimes. But me and TV go way back. Yeah. So All right, where can you find us?
Hey, if you liked what you heard on this episode or any of our episodes, you can find all of our episodes. That's a lot of episodes. You can find all of our content at beyondsundaypodcast.com. And of course, find Beyond Sunday wherever you want to listen to your podcast and recommend us to a friend or neighbor who maybe is trapped in a lie of their own. Maybe this will be...
That feels a little backhanded. Maybe don't.
You seem like somebody that's been lying to themselves. Listen to this podcast.
Don't introduce it to them that way. This might be of interest to you. But yeah, we'd love to have you recommend us out to friends and family. And let us know what you think. Send us an email at beyondsundaypodcast@gmail.com.
All right, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week with more Beyond Sunday.